Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. My name is Sister Pamela, and I am your host. And I would like to thank you all to our first show in 2022. That's right, January 4th, 2022. And this is A Time for Justice on the Elevated Places Network. This show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, which are really distractions. And this conduct and these distractions from the truth, they've really been impeding us from the path to justice and equal protection. And so tonight we want to talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are really in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. Again, my name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I would like to thank you all for listening. I would like to start by thanking the Elevated Places Network and the team, and that's Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad. And I would also like to thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because as we think about the person who is teaching us the truth and who is fighting for our justice, and it's just really just been such a powerful and just humbling experience for me to be able to be a student and to have actually had the grace and mercy to be exposed to these teachings. So I'm an attorney, and we like to talk about legal issues on this show, of course. We've been doing this show now since really 7 or 8 months, and it's been a very exciting experience because we've had different lawyers come on throughout the time, and every week on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central, we've been bringing to the audience topics based upon experiences that we see in the courtroom. And so this is the beginning of the year, and we're just getting started. And I can promise you, inshallah, that in 2022, we will be bringing more programming, exciting programming, thought-provoking guests and attorneys and legal people, advocates, and many, many people talking about justice and what they see. And we also want to expand our conversation to our youth in our nation, because one of the conversations we're having tonight is about building bridges, building generational bridges with our youth. I got that topic from one of the judges down in Alabama by the name of Brother Maurice Muhammad. I hope he calls in, because there is definitely this need, because our youth are our future and our youth are our leaders. And so we want to empower them with our experience, with our knowledge. And, you know, they give us joy, and they give us light. So this is what our conversation is about tonight. Today we're going to talk about fighting for our children, overcoming systemic obstacles. And tonight's show, I'm bringing on a guest. She's been with us on several occasions. She's a real dynamic sister, and she knows her way around this issue of fighting for youth and children and overcoming systemic obstacles. And her name is no other than Sister Marguerite Muhammad. Sister Marguerite, I'm going to open up your mic and welcome you to the show.
Oh, salam alaikum, sister. I really appreciate you asking me to be on here tonight, because, you know, I never miss an opportunity to talk about this subject.
Yes, ma'am.
This is all in my head. So all praises be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. Praises be to Allah. And also, we do have a youth, one of our younger adults, who's I believe is joining us tonight. And this is my daughter, and she promised to come on and give us some of what she sees as a perspective on what some of the benefits of her upbringing, some of her perspectives, what she sees in the community. And I'm going to open up her mic as well. I believe this is our sister Nyla.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, everybody.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Nyla. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for tonight's discussion. I know you have some other things that you have to do, but you know, as long as you can stay on, we really, really do appreciate you coming on. So again, tonight, you know, this is a legal show, and inshallah, some of the lawyers are going to call in, because we want to talk about success tonight as well. And as lawyers, you know, because 2021 has been a very, you know, toiling year. And so we always have to thank Allah for being with us and bringing us through and some of the successes and wins. So I asked some of the lawyers to call in and tell us about some of their best cases that they were so happy for their victories. And so I'm going to start with mine. And I want, in this case, I want to talk about the power of Allah and that He is with us in these courtrooms, because the courtrooms can be very intimidating places. Sometimes, you know, they're filled with all these Caucasians who don't play by the rules that they even set. So I had a police brutality case in Missouri, and this was before the Michael Brown case revealed just how much systemic racism is in that police force. Because again, we're talking about and so when you look at you're looking at the relating to the body as a whole. So what we ended up seeing is that all of the police departments in that St. Louis metropolitan area were pretty much as a whole rotten. So I had a case where a young man had been beaten up. And actually, he had been abused, and what you call that is police brutality, as we know. And it was also a violation of his constitutional rights, because anytime you're using your position to abuse the people, to charge him these exorbitant fines and fees, and then turn around and put a whole bunch of other cases on him because they beat him up, and he stood up for his rights. And so that was a case that I was able to, not only did I win against the criminal charges, he was charged with aggravated assault on some police officers, or some type of assault cases, and he was the one who was assaulted. But actually, we were able to both win those cases and get him found not guilty. We were also able to get some civil settlement for him in that case. And, you know, it was so interesting when we talk about the power of Allah, because I'm doing this trial, right, and I'm wondering how and are these police officers not going to, how I'm going to get this jury to believe that they're lying. And it was just the most interesting thing, because the police officer got on the stand and he forgot the lie that he told in the police report. So when I started to question him, he started telling a whole nother lie. And then I was able to, you know, say, well, isn't it true that your police report said this? And that really revealed even to the jury, well, you know, we even caught him in a lie. So, you know, again, that was not what I expected to happen. But to me, it shows that when we stand up, you know, the God stands up and helps us to succeed. And you know, so we have to be confident in these battles. That's what I'm trying to say. So, yes, ma'am, all praises are due to Allah. So tonight's show, we're talking about black youth, and everybody who knows me, we've been talking about this a lot. And so what we're seeing is that since more black people are making progress, since we're listening and moving out on the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, since we have such successes with the sovereignty and the separation projects, which are growing, and black people as a result of the pandemic are seeing that they can do for self. What we're starting to see again are these false narratives pushing integration. I was looking at some newspaper articles that were suggesting that black children need to be with white people in the school settings, then that's what will keep them from being failures, because they're seeing that we don't want to be with white people anymore. We don't want to educate our children as much. You know, there's a growing homeschooling was really big during the pandemic. Yes, ma'am, Sister Marguerite, there was an increase in homeschooling, 3.3% proportion. I think it increased by 5 times. And during this pandemic, and see, these are things that the Muslims, we have been pushing. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, and the Muslim followers, we can thank him and his efforts for us having the right to free education. And this was done, you know, way back in, I believe it was the 50s. But the point is that as we're seeing today that these are great solutions, you know, this enemy is still trying to hold on to our children. So we want to make sure tonight that we give information on why that's not a good idea to leave your children in these killing grounds. We want to talk about how the foster care system grows from that. We want to talk about sometimes how the social media is pulling in our children. But what we want to do is to give some pointers on how to fight for our children and overcome what we call systemic obstacles, which means that the system is rotten to the core, right? what do you have to say on that, Sister Marguerite?
You know, the thing that the book tells it plainly, our people suffer from a lack of knowledge. And when I discuss this with people who've really not been involved, they buy the hype. They think, okay, for the best interest of the children. You know, these white people are doing the best for the best interest of our children. So what is your problem? So one of the main things we have to do is re-educate our people on what's going on, because some of the people who have this mind think are not poor. These are some of our well-to-do black people who feel that, oh, nothing's wrong because they got a few crumbs. Their crumbs blind them to the reality of what's going on. And some of the misconceptions we have that my experience with the foster care system helped me to get past was that the court will always be fair.
Mm.
I went into there thinking that the court would always be fair and that no one in the court lies, and particularly
wow.
no one who is working for the government will come into the court and lie. And all those are misconceptions and were quickly dispelled, in my opinion, when I had my experience with the court. Now, you know, I came up in Mississippi, and your parents are from there, Sister Pamela. I came up in a place
right.
called Cleveland, Mississippi, and there were all kind of black townships around, you know, and they're still there. And I grew up seeing that blacks had a hospital. You know, the school I went to was called St. Gabriel's and was located in this township called Mount Bayou. And this Mount Bayou, even today, strictly, you have to be black to live in this town. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I went to the black Catholic school. All of my teachers were black. No experience with white teachers whatsoever. And I feel that we got what would be considered a private school education because our school, we were being taught, you know, way past what the public schools were getting. But yet we got them from black teachers. So I grew up seeing black professors, you know, black educators of all level, black mechanics. So my mind has not even, can even encompass us not doing for self. That's why
yes,
when
ma'am.
I heard the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, it made all the sense in the world because I saw black people doing for self, you know, living in a segregated community, and we didn't need to go outside the community for much of anything, you know, because
yes,
somebody had it on their farm. Somebody was growing it. Somebody was raising it. Or you pooled your money together and got it so that everybody got it. So in other words, those who know, like you know, Sister Pamela, you're from that area. Your parents are from that area. We have to make it plain to our people what you're facing. And you're facing, and I had to do that with my father, you know. And, you know, we're taught to respect our parents and everything. But my daddy had just got on my nerve about this this idea that black people can't do this and can't do that. And so he had complained one time too many. But I was
okay.
respectful, all praises due to Allah. And I had to stop him. I said, Dad, the thing that you are blaming, he said, well, they black folks don't like to pay their bill. Black folks are late. Black people cheat. Black people this and this and this. And I said, you know, I said, Dad, I belong to an organization of 3,000 white women, and we had maybe 5 black women in the whole group. I say white women do the same thing you are accusing black folks of doing.
Right.
They
right.
don't want to
so
pay their bill.
Right.
They late. They cheap. You know, they're always trying to get something. I say it's the same thing. And he couldn't.
Yeah.
He just said, really?
Yes.
I
yes,
say,
ma'am.
Yeah, Dad. So
yes, ma'am.
It's about educating our, you know, even our parents,
yes,
we have to educate in a loving way. And then
that's
I have
right.
Other things to add, but I was
yes, ma'am. Well, I want to bring in Sister Nyla, because Sister Nyla has some experience with education in a private environment, in a independent black school environment, being educated in the Muhammad Islamic, you know, in our schools. So Nyla, can you give us any input on the importance you think of that experience of being educated in a black environment?
Well, again, I want to extend the greetings. I would like to say that growing up, most of my childhood, was engulfed in going to not only smaller private schools surrounded by black people, but then, excuse me, I just ran up some steps, so I'm a little winded, but including being in environments of the Nation of Islam. And so I think that it allowed me to have a sense of self, because I think it might have been Minister Farrakhan, the Honorable, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who spoke and said that when you look at a picture, I think it might have been Brother Nuri. And he was given a lecture one day, and he talked about how when you look at a picture, you oftentimes look for yourself in that picture first. And so I think of that the same way with education. When you're, especially throughout history, you're looking for pieces of you, things that you can hold on to. And so being able to be taught about the success within the black community, not just today, but throughout history, because a lot of the times we're always taught that it starts for us as soon as we got off the boat. So not knowing what your people are capable of can cause you to kind of have a little bit of self-doubt, not knowing your family history. So I was always very appreciative of being able to know some of my start and some of where black people are in this history, because you're able to find out that we are a lot of history. So I think that was probably the first thing that came to mind when you asked that.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for that. Because, you know, tonight, and please, if anyone has a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue, because, you know, this is definitely a talking show where we invite audience participation. But I really appreciate what you said, Nyla, about the confidence and knowing who you are, because one of the questions we want to ask is, what do black children need? What do children need? And first of all, backing that up, it's like, well, why is this important? Because when you're raising children, the Constitution gives them the right to privacy. Everybody has the right to privacy under this Constitution. Now, we know that we have our God-given rights, but under the Constitution, it's under the First Amendment. And that is tied to the family. So children, because they're young, because they're tender, because they're minors, oftentimes they can't exercise their own rights to privacy. So it's very important what schools you put your children in. It's very important where your children play. It's very important who youth are around. It's very important what's going into their minds, who educates them, you know, and what they're doing. And so, you know, we saw that on the King Richard movie where Venus and Serena's dad gave us some excellent insight about self-confidence and the way that you protect and embrace and really encircle your children, and because he didn't let anybody just get in his children's ear. And so I think that, you know, one of the experiences that you may have, Sister Nyla, and you too, Sister Marguerite, as we're talking, is a positive, you know, shield of black people who are in a community. May not be perfect, but we are protecting our children from some of what they see in these public schools environments, for example. Want to bring up an issue about, it's called special education. You know, as we know, special education is an area that we are seeing that there's a disproportionate amount of black youth who are put into these special education environments in these public school systems. Actually, we know that our children are disproportionately placed into prisons, juvenile facilities, removed from their homes, and this is part of a targeting that actually goes on. So when you look at special education, according to the black psychologist, they're talking about how the problem is so bad that it results in, you know, just profound failures. You get profound failures when young black males are put into special educational programs. They're warehoused, and it results in dire health statistics, unemployment. It results in higher incarceration rates.
it just really disempowers their lives, is what is according to this report. So why would we want to put our children in areas like that? You know, so there's a, go ahead. Yes, please.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to chime in on what you were saying. I think throughout the many people that I know to be teachers in today's time, what they were seeing when the pandemic hit was that not only are these schools having a hard time teaching the children, when these children are going home, the parents are, because our people perish from a lack of knowledge, these parents are actually not knowing what they are supposed to be doing when they are getting home with their children. And I think it really did show, again, bringing it back to that pandemic, where so many people were at home. And so many, I've seen so many different posts on social media where different parents are coming on and, like, really on their knees, kind of confused because they didn't realize what it took to teach their child one, and they didn't realize either how much of their child's taboo to them and had been took over by somebody else, or when it was time to pass the baton, they were not able to pick it up.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And like what you're saying, another thing I think you're saying too is that realizing that their children, you know, parents are realizing the educational needs that their children have, and many of these parents thought that those needs were being satisfied in these school environments, but by actually having a hands-on with your child, you actually can see this is what they need. And so, you know, you're bringing up an excellent point, Sister Nyla, because as we fight for our children, we have to continue to have workshops and training for parents to learn how to give the children what they need, because they're not getting it in these killing fields,
right,
these pipelines to the prison.
Well,
so, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. You know, I want to make a point about that, the education, because we were contacted. I belong to a Black Mothers Forum in Phoenix. It's still operational. And we were contacted by a brother from Peru who had done a study for the ACLU. And the study for the ACLU had the evidence of what we know was happening to our children, and that was the disproportionality in disciplining and how the SROs, school resource officers, were being used against our children. They were criminalizing our children, and, you know, such a high quantity of our children were going into jail. The school-to-prison pipeline was on and popping. And what we as Black people have done is we have turned our children over to the slave master's children to educate. In Arizona, we have, and, you know, a lot of people don't know, it was really the Black free slaves that started educating their children. White people didn't believe in educating, particularly poor children. They had nothing for these children. And
right,
it was the poor, the free slaves that taxed themselves and developed a system by which all of their children could be educated. Now we have Miss Becky in our schools, and because of the racial proportionality in Arizona, it's like 8% of the teachers in Arizona are white women. And they're being brought in from places that they have never had contact with a Black child before. So now we have these women who were at the hanging tree as well, well-dressed with her dressed-up children, as our people were being butchered. So now tell me, what has happened to the white woman that has opened her eyes to her role in participating in this? Nothing. So she still has the same mindset, and we're turning our babies over to these people every day.
That's true.
So one of the things that I saw with our parents was, of course, the disciplinary issue was flushed down the toilet. No more disciplinary call to the office because the child looked at you funny. You know, just insanity, the total insanity. And a lot of the parents that I talked to expressed their relief, really, from wondering, when am I going to get called to school? What is going to happen today?
Yeah, because actually there's a national statistic that says 82% of public school teachers are white. And so that in and of itself is telling you, you know, that's a very powerful number because black children do better with black, you know, teachers, people who look like them. And so one of the interesting statistics that came out of the pandemic or our words is that the child welfare system had, they really got revealed because it was shown that child abuse went down during the pandemic. And although they tried to really push the false narrative that the children were somehow in worse condition being at home with their parents, this was not true. And there are plenty of studies that actually, you know, revealed that this was actually, that children and child abuse actually was reduced during the time when children were at home with their parents. Because a lot of times we know these false cases, and many of the cases are false, they're based on conjecture, they're called in by these schools. And so really during the pandemic, you know, the narrative that black people can't take care of their own children was really being debunked in the child welfare system because you had much lower cases of child abuse. And so, you know, this, I think that's a very important statistic. And then when we look at the racist propaganda that was pushed in many of those mainstream news medias, because they kept trying to sound the alarm and, you know, black children are at risk. But in reality, children were doing better statistically when it came to lower child abuse alleged rates, because as we know, a lot of times this is just how they're stealing our children from their families. Yeah.
Right.
So
did
anyone want to weigh in on that topic?
I'm always going to wait. It's a panel. But one of the things that, you know, the mess, Donald, be like Mama said, history. History is the go-to when you want to find out something. And I would tell your audience, they need to go and watch this movie called Rabbit Proof Fence.
Okay.
Just like it sounds, Rabbit Proof Fence. And I'm sure you can pull it up on Netflix, you know, no charge. And also study the history out of Phoenix, Arizona, of this school. It was called Indian School. And there is a major boulevard today named Indian School. And Indian School was where they had they would go up on the reservation and take the Indian children and bring them there and put them in school. And what they didn't tell you, they also had them working. Some of these children worked for construction companies, you know, friends of the school administrators. And my husband told me as he grew up and he would go to school and he felt it was just an atrocious feeling to walk by this place because the Indian children would be standing at the fence wanting to get out, you know, and they're walking, you know, to school. But their history of going after the children is legendary.
Right.
And this Rabbit Proof Fence is about some Australian children that were taken, you know, the Aboriginal children. And these children walked 1,000 miles to get back to their tribe from where they had been taken. And it showed, talked about the journey. So we need to educate ourselves after these, you know, like I said that time, you know, these people don't mean us no good. When they're going after your children, they certainly mean you no good. And this
yes,
is what they have done.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I want to report, give you all the information on the report. The child physical abuse did not increase during the pandemic. This was done by a MD, PhD, by the name of Robert Siege. And it actually says that the total number of child abuse reports to state child welfare agencies plummeted up to 70% during the pandemic. Do you hear that? And it's saying that and decreased monitoring by educators due to school closures cannot explain the full decline. And so as Sister Margarita so is telling us, these agencies have been targeting our youth. And this is one thing that we need to take from this experience with the pandemic. How can we trust and these people who have systemically white supremacy targeted black youth? Another thing I wanted to read, and I just kind of want to throw this out here, in the book Medical Apartheid by Harriet Washington, where it's called The Dark History of Medical Experimentation on Black Americans from Colonial Times to the Present, she actually tells a story of, it's called Children's Crusade in Chapter 11. And this research talks about the targeting of young African Americans. And so she talks about how black youth, you know, where her 16-year-old son was being held in a detention center in upstate New York. Now, this is a lady, Charisse Johnson. So her 16-year-old was being held in a detention center. And then one day in 1992, representatives from Columbia University appeared at Johnson's door, explaining that they wanted her other son, her six-year-old Isaac, to go to the hospital for a series of simple interviews and tests. You know, and it goes on to say how, you know, she didn't feel like she could refuse. Because what they told her is that they would pay her approximately $100. And they also had something for Isaac. Now, this is Miss Washington I'm quoting in this chapter, that they had something for Isaac. They were going to give this six-year-old child a Toys R Us certificate if he would participate. And so her child was subjected over a decade, is what it says. Over a decade, Isaac became ensnared in a research initiative tailored specifically for children of color. And she talks about this happened between 1992 and 1997. And this was done by the New York State Psychiatric Institute. And it talked about how they gave children 6 and 10 the drug fenfluramine. So they're giving this 6-year-old a drug and testing him. And so this is not just an isolated event. You know, she was actually, Ms. Johnson was testifying before Congress on what had happened to her 6-year-old, where they were given, the psychiatric agency was giving him, I think it's called fenfluramine. You know, so when we're looking at now and they're coming after our children trying to give them these shots, and they're oftentimes even trying to take away parental approval and consent. You know, this is something, this particular experiment was in 1992. You know, and here's the kicker. So please, anybody who has any questions or any comments after I read this, but one of the things they were testing was to see if black boys had violent propensities. And then they also wanted, you know, the violent propensities and the aggressiveness, they were trying to say that those things were genetic. And so they were testing for these tendencies toward aggression, giving them these drugs and measuring their serotonin levels. And then they go in even further and talk about how this Wasserman, who's another doctor, her idea was that this was also the black children having a propensity toward violence was a result of bad parenting, you know, and because black boys were fated to be violent because of parents, you know, psychopathology. And so these are the mindsets of the people that are part of these institutions that educate our children, these 82%, you know, and others. So, again, this is why we're looking at the topic of fighting for our children and actually overcoming these systemic obstacles. So, you know, I wanted someone to weigh in terms of what do we think, you know, as we see the trends of Black excellence. And we are seeing Black excellence. We're seeing the, you know, the technology Blacks who are actually, you know, scientists. And we're seeing, of course, you know, just all across the board in any given field that you put us in, our children are excelling. You know, our people are, my youngest daughter said, you know, there's a tie between homeschoolers and those who are likely to learn about entrepreneurship and Black unity.
Right.
And so kind of want to put that out there. I think that's a really good point, Sister Nyla.
Yes, ma'am.
And let me get her input on that if she would give us some insight, because I know in the school environments that you've always attended, do you feel like you've been given tools for entrepreneurship or any Black excellence in an economic space?
Well, I'll say that going back to it, it immediately makes me think about my high schooling of going to a small private school. There was this narrative of letting us know that we were able to accomplish whatever we set our minds to. And I think a lot of the time, sometimes there can be a cap for what you're good at and what you're capable of being able to do. And so I think that it gave us all the narrative at the time that even if we weren't all destined to be, quote unquote, the most successful person in the world, it still gave you the mindset that no matter what I do, no matter what I am destined to do, I'm going to put my best foot forward. I'm going to know that I'm giving my best me as I'm doing whatever job that is. And I think when you have a mindset like that, sometimes it can cause you to not necessarily take certain things you feel that aren't for you, because you know you have a higher value in yourself. So I could honestly say that a lot of situations that I think in was because I was influenced by strong Black people around me that let me know that I could be a strong Black person. And I know we don't sometimes public schools will not try to make it a race thing, but like you say, it is important to be around people like you, because you usually do better in your environment. So I think that letting these Black students know and encouraging these Black students, because acting like you don't see race won't get you anywhere, but encouraging where they are is important. And again, just like small snippets, going to the school that I went to, we used to have things like Entrepreneurial Day, where people were able to sell the smallest to the biggest. If you could cook, you could come sell your items that you cook. If you just have a good eye for things and you know how to find the latest fashion, you was able to come sell these little things just to give yourself an idea of what it feels like to be selling something, to be putting your product out there. And I feel like that's important as you're growing and as you're getting older. So, yeah.
Yes, ma'am, beautiful. And for the record, she did attend the Elevated Places, which is the school in Houston. And the motto at that school was that the children were, I am what God says I am, not what the world says I am. So, you know, just that drive and that God force that is put into these young people in the nation, you know, because of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we're just so blessed. So thank you for sharing that, Sister Nyla. Sister Marguerite, did you want to share? And anyone who has a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. We're welcoming comments and questions tonight. This is our first show of 2022. And, you know, and we're pushing, but we want, inshallah, to continue to bring you all quality information and topics and legal information. And as 2022 continues to go, that's exactly what we intend to do, inshallah.
Well, Sister Pamela, have you seen King Richard? Have you seen the documentary about Richard Williams, Venus and Serena's father?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I did see it. I did love that.
Okay.
And yes,
that
ma'am.
Is
yes,
so
ma'am.
Typical. I mean, that is so typical of just Black excellence, you know, and it shows how the God just comes out in Black people, you know, no matter how suppressive the system was to him, he developed these girls in a way where they are superstar.
That's right.
You know, just
yes,
and that's just indicative of what's sitting in the average Black person. You know, when we don't, that's why, and I can't remember where I got the article from, but it talks about why you have to put obstacles in front of people. You have to try to make the playing field level for you. Because, you know, you dealing with a people who just excellence just rolls out of them, you know, they don't even think about it.
Yes,
they produce a superstar.
Yes,
so I thought about that, and it's when you were mentioning that about Black excellence.
No, you are
everywhere.
Right. I agree. I thought that was a great model. And one of the things he had was a plan. And I heard Sister Dr. Ava mention that as well. But, you know, that he had a plan, and he worked that plan. And so that's something else for us to look at going into 2022 is to set goals and plans and objectives and then move out on them. Sister Nyla, were you saying something?
I was going to just touch bases back on just the mindset of being educated around Black people. I think sometimes we don't always get a chance to go to predominantly Black schools, high schools, middle schools, elementaries, but then a lot of us do get a chance to go to HBCUs, which I think can be kind of life-changing for youth that have never been in positions to see multiple Black people winning, coming from multiple different places, and then having that, I know most people that go to college, you know, PWI, HBCU, regardless, they always have that one person they can say influenced them or helped them. But you oftentimes find that at HBCUs abundantly, whether it's, you know, the dorm RA that you are looking at like a grandparent almost, to the your teachers, to sometimes your the cafeteria people, like it's just to the classmates and the friends that you make along the way, you find yourself being engulfed in just good content, good people. But it made me think when the sister brought up the story of the Venus and Serena and how they had that father that had a plan, that whether he knew exactly, he had goals for them. And I think a lot of the times it just goes back to making sure you have that village, because sometimes in situations where you don't have maybe the money or the situations to have good people at your school, being able to have a good village, like, I think is important. And that's why I think it's important to teach, because, again, going back to our people lacking from a lack of – our people perishing from a lack of knowledge, I think that there are just a lot of parents that are not lacking in love at all, and knowledge is causing certain downfalls that could have been prevented, because then it's not that they're not willing and ready to learn. They just need somebody to teach them.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful. That is so awesome. You know, and I think for one of the things I liked also that Richard Williams talked about is that he definitely talked about how women, he really talked well about how his mother taught him so many things. And, you know, he was encouraged by a Black woman's mind. And he talks about the importance of black women and how we can think. But he also, one of the things I really liked the movie showing was how he kept certain people from being in his children's ear. And if they were in his children's ear, they were going to have to come a way that was pleasing to him, because he looked at the importance of the environment and who is, as my daughter was saying, in that circle. You know, and I think so many times we, you know, put our children out into these neighborhoods and, you know, and as I'm looking at an article that was in the New York Times, you know, this writer is talking about how children have failed behind, and they're just really looking at what they can do to help these children. And this is a white man talking about this system that our experience has shown that it's white supremacy. So for us to not realize and not to take heed that perhaps this is not the system that you want in your children's ears, because look, the special education, with the school to prison pipeline, you know, with so many other things, with the testing to see, you know, giving 6-year-olds drugs and giving the mama a Toys R Us child card, gift card, you know, these are not people that we want around our children. And, you know, so we're on our way in 2022. We've been on our way. All praises due to the work and efforts of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and rebuilding the nation, and, you know, all of our local and national, you know, leaders who are helping us, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, you know, our minister here in Houston, Brother Eileen, Brother Ishmael, and you know, and the work of the believers and you know, the schools, like Nyla was saying, the teachers that sacrifice, that really do pour into the children the love. And what I'm saying is that I wanted to take the opportunity tonight to really thank my nation, you know, because I know what this legal system looks like. But I also, because of that, know that my nation is the best nation, and that Master Farrakhan Muhammad, the God, you know, has ensured us the success. And so, you know, that's what we wanted to talk about tonight in terms of families and fighting for our children. So did anyone want to add to this? You know, I took a quote from one of the articles in the Final Call where a brother has opened in Chicago the Salaam Community Wellness Center. And the founders are Dr. Constance Shabazz and Abdul Akbar Muhammad. And they started a center to address the pandemic as well as the disparities related to poor education, housing, and food deserts. And this is an article, I believe it's in the December 28th version of the Final Call. But he goes on to say, they talk about farming, they talk about entrepreneurism, but he also talked about how I think what we're doing now is we're pushing these colonizers out of our community. And that's what I think we need to do, Akbar Muhammad said. Instead of complaining about what colonizers are doing to us and coming into our community and taking revenue out and not allowing it to circulate and doing for us, I think that we need to be able to take certain industries, learn about these particular industries, and we can begin to monopolize those industries. And so I thought that was a really good point. You know, even to say, don't even send your children to the colonizers. How about that? We're going to add that to
you know, Sister Pamela.
Yes, ma'am.
You reminded me of something. I talked to my dad about the year before he passed away. And he passed away in 2016. And I, you know, Allah blessed me to, you know, to say all the things I wanted to know from him, I asked him. So we live Cleveland, Mississippi, which is what, 8 miles from Money, Mississippi. Money, Mississippi is where Emmett Till was murdered. And I asked, and I was born maybe 2 weeks prior to that. And so I asked my father about, you know, what happened and how did they feel and all of this. What he, the bottom line when he got to it, he said, these people weren't too smart, because these people who killed Emmett Till were the store owners. They owned the store that all the black people in that area had to come to shop, right?
Okay.
So after this had happened, all of those black people refused to purchase anything, to step foot in their store. They ended up going bankrupt. And this is what their unity did. They would have done without, or they would, they, what they did was, you know, other people went to a more distant place. And, you know, this power scared the people in that area. And even so much so that when these, this white group that killed Emmett Till tried to rent land from people, they couldn't even rent land. They wouldn't, they wouldn't rent land to them. So we have a whole lot of power. And when you have Asians in your neighborhood that disrespect you, I will not go to their store. When you have Arabs, I don't go to their store. I just do without until I find me a black store, and I don't care about paying more for it. I'm just not going to cross that threshold. So we have to realize that this, the power is in our hands. We just need to stop being lazy about utilizing
it. Yes, ma'am. That's right. That is so beautiful. And so that kind of segues into another question that we had, and it was about what can we do to build and lend to the generational power as elders, and from the younger people, what do they need from us more? What do, you know, we can always tell them what we think they need, but they can tell us too. They're out here seeing these things. So I'm going to open up Sandera Mallory's. She's on as well, her mic, and she's with the National Association of Black Social Workers. Sister Sandera.
Hotep family. Good evening. How's everybody?
Fine. Thank you, ma'am. And did you have a comment that you wanted to make regarding this topic? I know we had talked about some things earlier today.
I just was able to jump on, and I was listening to my sister's discussion about seeking wisdom from our elders. And we could always use that as a form of opportunity to teach and to get information so we can build our communities, because that's what it's all about. But we need to get clarity from our elders. And I thought that was a wonderful idea that the sister had about making sure you get with your elders. Get with those who have history so that we can then pass that on to our current system of young people, but mentoring and always listening to make sure that we know what's going on with our children is another good way of making sure we keep our community healthy and strong.
Yes, ma'am. And so, Nyla, I wanted to ask you, Sister Nyla, can you tell us, give us any insight into what you think some of the young people may feel that they need more of from, you know, from the elders and the community, how we can share?
Again, I think it really is important for the guidance to be given to the young people from the elder community, because I think a lot of the time humans are saying that the young people are for war and the older people and the older, wiser people are for counsel, that a lot of the times we get kind of stuck because sometimes young people have the mindset they can't, nobody tells them anything. And then when you're surrounded by elders, unfortunately, and I think that it's just so interesting because there was this quote I always used to hear growing up where it was like, you don't get to be an older fool, but you are starting to see that some of the elders that some of these young people are surrounded by, they don't necessarily feel like they're getting anything from them, because I think these are a lot of scared to give their wisdom. And there is this group of people that are almost too scared to give because they think that it's going to cause them to lose what they already have. And I think that is important that the connection is still kept between the old and the young, because you do, like, you know, when you know your history, you're able to do something different, but you won't know the history unless you sit down and actually have conversations with these people. And so, yeah, I know a lot of social media trends that I'm seeing now is really young people disrespecting older people, young people going out of their way to, quote unquote, check older people. And I think that's not the point. You know, you get what you can get. You get the wisdom, you get the knowledge, and the things that you don't feel are for you, you do have the option to be able to take it or leave it alone. But a lot of us are not even getting the knowledge. So then it's like young people going off of what they think they know and not actually having any type of education behind those words.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. Because I know you, Sister Sandera, you have mentored many young people in, you know, working with the debates and teams. And can you, what do you feel about building these generational bridges? How important is that with young people?
It's vital, Sister Pamela. We structure, you know, how do we build a new nation unless we mentor our young? And so we need to really be looking at how the Sankofa bird, which is what we use as one of our models, the bird has the egg in the mouth, but it's, again, looking backwards, if you're familiar with that symbolism of the Sankofa bird. But we believe in going back to set those that's behind us so that we can take the future forward. That's the egg that's in the mouth. But we definitely believe in mentoring and modeling and teaching and spending time with our young people because we are their teachers. So we really need to be able to provide that education that they need, that spiritual growth. It is vital for our young people to see us doing productive and rewarding experiences so that they can see what it looks like and be able to emulate that when it's their time to take leadership. So I definitely am a strong advocate for mentorship and for modeling for young people and for, you know, being an active listener. That's part of, I'm a social worker by career path. And so I believe in definitely listening and hearing what the young people have to say, because they have a lot of information. I mean, we may have to dig deep sometimes to get it, but they definitely are knowledgeable of what's going on out there in those streets, and we need to be able to dissect that so we can help put those things in perspective. So I'm definitely a strong advocate for modeling and mentoring.
Yes, ma'am. And again, if anyone has a question or comment, you know, press the number one to get in the host queue. Because, you know, there's a legal principle when it comes to child welfare and this whole concept of child abuse, which they're trying to, you know, paint black people falsely as being abusive to our children, when statistically that's not true. It is not true. Black people are not more abusive. Our children, though, are removed from our homes at higher rates. And one of the issues is that we don't abuse our children, but this issue of child neglect is one of the issues that if a black family comes into the system, oftentimes a neglect case. And a neglect case may be something like the sister went to the store and left a child at home, you know, 9 years old or something, and, you know, mom didn't have a choice and went to the store, and, you know, that's considered neglect. That could be considered neglect.
Well, it's just a problem.
And that's, we know, support system. Yes, ma'am. And what I wanted to say, because I want you to definitely chime in, is also when we look at the problems that our youth are facing as a whole, sometimes as a black community, we could say that maybe we're guilty of neglect, And we could go back to the super predator propaganda that was put out and is put out saying the youth are bad. And as a result, we turned our backs on them and maybe didn't look at their needs. But that's a whole other concept. Go ahead, Sister Marguerite. Yes, ma'am.
Well, the idea of this neglect has been expanded purposely so that they can capture more children. You know, they put things like, oh, you can't go to the post, to the mailbox across the driveway. You got five children asleep. You got to take those children with you, which doesn't make any sense. But they will still pin you with neglect. And this is one of the things that happened with my son and his children. He had two babies in diapers in the middle of December. You know, children are fine, safe watching TV. He had to go to get the other one a block away at school. So DCS is telling us, well, he should have woke them all up and took them with him, which makes no sense at all. In the middle of February, I think it was February, not December, but I think I say December, but it's February when it's freezing.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
They purposely
yes,
have done that. And I heard this woman who was in, she's not a caseworker, but she's on that level where they're making these decisions. And she told us to our face, they're expanding the definition of neglect for that purpose.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, and you're right. You know, that is just, and if you, these are tricks. You know, these are poll taxes. These are just black codes, you know, because if your son may have taken the child, or if the woman that I described took the child to the store at night, then they may have said, well, you know, you had this child outside. So what the reality is that
exactly.
We have to get away from these people who are predatory against our families. And we have to support, like I say, I think the big issue is, are we guilty, those of us who may have resources in the community and knowledge, are we paying enough attention to those in our community that need support systems? You know, just like you said down in Mississippi, you know, down in Mississippi, Sister Marguerite, where the community was, you know, more self-supporting. That we were all that we had. And so,
And Sister Pamela.
Go ahead.
Sister Pamela, another point I want to make for the audience to understand, that term super predator did not arise from black children. That arose from a study they did. They were studying the double Y chromosome. They found that serial killers had tended to have this double Y chromosome. And they found, guess who had it? It was white boys who had this double Y chromosome. They know this. They got the study to show it. But how did this morph into being our children being called super predators is the question.
Oh, and you're absolutely right. I mean, Sister Marguerite, if we can go back to the medical apartheid piece that I read, where, you know, these studies were actually manufactured and made, you know, to suit a particular narrative. And so if you're going to put propaganda into the community, oftentimes these false narratives are just made up out of the air, you know, but they go back to the same stereotypes from slavery. So, you know, the black man in slavery was accused of being some way to justify the evil treatment. So again, you make up these stories, and I think it was William Bennett, you know, who they predicted that there was going to be this, you know, this group of children who were just so whatever, violent, and that's how it got, the lie got told and got started. And it's, you know, since they hate black people, white supremacy, and the need to build these prisons and kill our youth, which is where we are again, never left there. Yeah, so no, you're right. But, you know, and I could go on that topic because I saw that happen overnight, you know, where the lie got told in the court. and it was overnight that you almost had a 70% increase in juvenile detentions. So they just start locking all these children up right before our eyes. You know, very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see another attorney. I know Brother Athiel, I believe, is on the line. And so I wanted to open up his mic because I had asked some of the brothers and sisters to call in and share with us any of their successes, any piece of knowledge and, that they wanted to share. So, Brother Athiel, I'm going to open up your mic.
Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-oh. Is that you, Brother Athiel?
Can you hear me?
I can. Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, well, alaikum salam, ma'am, and good evening to everyone. And it's good being on. You know, getting some stuff done, but it's good being on.
Yes, sir. Of course. I know you've been busy. And we started out, we're talking about families, and we're talking about fighting for our children, and we're talking about overcoming obstacles. So I also had asked you all earlier if you had a legal story you wanted to share that talks about a triumph or a victory where you overcame an obstacle and you thought, you know, something was against you, the forces were against you. Did you want to share something or just share some tidbit that you have? Yes, sir.
There are victories, but you know, as Brother Arif, our general counsel of the Nation of Islam, has always said, you know, that, you know, and I agree with this, we shouldn't get too, or at least I don't, get too overly, I guess, proud. And if a decision is in our favor, or you certainly don't get overly discouraged if a decision is against you, because, you know, we just have to know that we do, you know, put the best argument forth, you know, protecting the you know, the persons whom we represent in whatever vein it might be, if it's a criminal accusation, if it's you know, human rights or civil rights violation or whatever the situation might be, you know, we have to stand on, you know, and representing the persons who entrust us with their representation and do the best job that we can, you know, and know fully well that when we go into those courtrooms, for the most part, in whatever endeavor, that it's us against them. You know, and what I mean by that is, if it's a criminal accusation, make no mistake about it, that stuff about you're innocent to proven guilty and all of that stuff, you know, take that stuff. That stuff should just fall by the wayside. It's you and the person you're representing against everybody there, because for the most part, they're looking at it, and in my mind, they're looking at it and saying that, hey, you know, that the person must have done something, or he or she wouldn't be here, you know. And so we, though, you know, in representing persons, we have to believe, you know, in what it is that the persons that we're representing, you know, tells us. And if indeed, you know, we do our own investigation and find out that, hey, the person may have done what it is, then we have to go into another mode of protecting him or her, making sure that whatever punishment, that there's no over punishment, you know, again, if it's a criminal accusation or whatever the situation might be. But, you know, but we have to hold our heads high and know fully well and make the argument is what it amounts to, because at the end of the day, when everything is done, you know, we'll be charged with the argument of, hey, did we make, or charged with the question, did we make the argument, you know, or
we
just, you know, just take what they told us and moved on? You know, we have to make sure that in any endeavor that we're representing somebody and that we make the argument, and we put our best, you know, foot forward, so to say, and, you know, and not be afraid as to, you know, that we may not win or the result may not be in our favor. As long as we've overturned every stone, dotted every I, and crossed every T, that is the most important thing. And again, don't get too proud or too haughty if we get a favorable decision, because sometimes you can get a favorable, what do they say sometimes, that saying that we may win the battle but lose the war, so to say. Well, you know, but we have to know then, hey, every time we're in the court, we're in a battle and a battle and a battle, because the ultimate victory comes then, you know, when the war is actually over, so to say. So, you know, that's what I look at it as, you know. And yes, we've had some successes, and then sometimes we've had some things that, some decisions that have not gone in our favor, you know. And, you know, you try to do the best you can, you know, and then, you know, get prepared for the next argument or the next person or the next trial or the next hearing, whatever the situation may be. And it's all a learning experience. As Brother Arf has always taught me, hey, this is why they call it a practice of law. We're practicing, you know, and you can rely on, you know, the things that happened in your past, the favorable decisions, the favorable outcomes, even the unfavorable outcomes, preparing you for the next battle, for the next challenge that you'll be facing in representing somebody.
Yes, sir. Faith. That's what just, I hear you talking a lot about faith for me, because it's always been a part of my what I put in my briefcase all the time. Let me ask you real fast, Brother Phil, when it comes to this right to remain silent, how important is that if a person is actually approached, you know, in the law enforcement environment or questioned regarding something, how important is it that they exercise the right to remain silent?
Well, as Brother Gerald would say, you know, our counsel, hey, I think he said that he said it on a number of occasions. He has it, I believe also he has it on the back of one of his business cards, say nothing.
Right.
Say nothing. And so, hey, don't, you know, so many times, you know, we will hear sometimes, okay, well, I don't have anything to hide. Well, as I always say, they're playing chess and we're playing checkers. You don't know sometimes if you may be a person of interest. Or you may, you know, you could very invariably be the center of an investigation. Or, you know, even as you know, Sister Pamela, you know, in depositions, we'll tell persons that we're representing who are being deposed, just answer the questions asked.
Right.
Don't open the door. Well, I've been actually, in, you know, I've told persons I'm representing, hey, just answer the questions, and then they will open the door for things. And in fact, persons and the persons I'm being that I'm deposing will open a door, and we never thought about those things before. But now that the
right.
door is open, and so now I know we're talking
and so
about
opening the door is like opening the door is like saying, you know, a lawyer asking a person during a deposition, well, did you eat an egg sandwich? And then the witness will say, no, I didn't eat an egg sandwich. I ate a fish sandwich, though. It's like, well, they didn't
correct.
Ask you a fish sandwich.
And you never even, and then say, so, well, let's go down that road. So again,
yeah.
Now,
fish,
and so
okay.
in that same vein, in a criminal accusation, you know,
right.
when you don't, you know, that's the same, you can use that same analogy, that if you start saying something, a response can sometimes go to another question being asked. And then you
right.
wind up saying so many different things. And even though you may not have something to hide, well,
exactly.
the person, let's say there may be another person who might be the target of an investigation.
Right.
Now you may very well have opened the door so and put them in a very difficult situation because you did not exercise your right to remain silent.
Yes,
and I would just tell, we can't look at it as, hey, I have nothing to hide. Well, we know naturally if we didn't do anything, we don't have anything to hide. But there's no crime to remaining silent any daggone way.
It's your right.
So,
it's your right. Yes.
Exactly. You know, so
right.
you know, you get pulled over, you know, just ask, I'm sorry, just answer what is being asked. But when people start, when you start being asked these different questions, okay, then you got to start thinking, why are you asking me these sorts of questions? Well, now I'm just
yeah.
not going
right.
to volunteer anything, is what it amounts
to. That's right. Yeah, no, that's very important. Thank
so
you for that.
Take that advice, as Brother Gerald always says. say nothing.
Right, and sign nothing.
You got that right.
Yeah, you got that right. Because what we see in courts often is that the very information that the only information that sometimes is used against people is what they told them. And it could very well, you could very well be innocent, but because you said you were there, then, well, now you told them you were there. So it's, you know, exercise your right to remain silent, I think, is so important. So I wanted to give a couple other legal tips for tonight. I took it off of a website, Fabian Weber, but it's 8 dangers of social media to discuss with kids and teens. And I think this is very important because social media and internet has some great, great things for us. It, you know, it helps us to grow and gives us so much learning, but it also is a can be a problem, especially if young people don't know how to follow the rules. And so one of the dangers, she said, is sharing too much. Make sure your children aren't sharing too many details online. And this goes into that watching your children, as I think one of the sisters said earlier, you know, observing, having conversations. Don't just let them go into these rooms and just be there for hours and hours and hours, days and days and days online, because it can be very dangerous. They talk about making sure that locations aren't tagged, like if they just have to take that picture of their vacation selfie and they send it, well, make sure that the location isn't turned on. Encourage your children to understand that private doesn't necessarily mean safe. So that, you know, something connecting with predators, you know, this whole thing about sex trafficking sometimes is done online. So like they say, cyber predators don't just see a child online and then look up their address. No, they say the predators, they actually cultivate relationships with children online and then get the children to come to them. They say number 4 is allowing your child to get on social media too early. I think that's very important. They're now talking about waiting till the 8th, meaning I think they're saying 8th grade potentially is a time when access, you know, to data, whereas because one of the things about social media is they say it can interfere with school work and grades. It can be addictive. It's changing childhood. It can increase anxiety, depression, interfering with sleep, expose children to sexual content. You know, so often, you know, we want our children to be so smart, and I think, again, access to what's online can sometimes help us with our education, but sometimes as well it's a balance, and it does impact. So they say not having clear-cut phone rules. So you've got to have these ground rules, and assuming you're in the know, if you're just following the child, you know, we're talking about really having conversations and real relationships with your young people. Online bullying has tended to be a new issue that we're hearing about, and you got to really look at that. Talking with your child, explaining the difference between tattling and reporting and whatever, and you know, and I think with Black people online bullying, and I won't say this is just with Black people because I don't know what other people do online, but sometimes people want to fight online, you know, getting back and forth into bickering. So that's another issue. So, you know, I wanted to put that out there because we used to just do know your rights and right to remain silent, but now with social media coming into our homes, impacting what I said earlier, which is your right to privacy, this is very important. So we're down to the final, and I thank everyone for coming on tonight's show. And so if anyone has a closing remark or comment they would like to make, please do so at this time. Yes.
This is Nyla. I did just want to say, just piggybacking off of what you were just talking about, I think that the overstimulation of the things that you can see on the internet sometimes, if you're not able to understand it at the time, I think sometimes age has a factor as well as just understanding. I think that's why it's important for our parents or these children, the children's parents, to be able to have conversations with the children, because so many things are out here, so many websites, so many videos, so many pictures, so many things are easily accessible. And if you don't understand what's going on, it can cause you to have some issues, I would like to say. So just communication is always key when it comes to raising your children, where everything is literally at the push of a button.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for that, because this is something that you all's generation was at the beginning, you know, of the internet explosion. And so, you know, I really appreciate your feedback, because this is, again, why it's so important to build these generational bridges with our young people and those who might be a little older and those who might be a little younger. We've got to tighten up these connections, family, especially 2022. You know, I'm thanking Allah for you all joining us tonight. Did anyone have any other comment that they wanted to make? Because we're down to our last minute.
You know, and yes, and
so, okay, go ahead, Brother Phil.
So,
yes.
You know, when you're also dealing with social media stuff, as you know, Sister Pamela, you know, from the criminal accusation side, you know, we've been in seminars with, you know, the prosecuting attorneys and everything, and they'll tell you one of the first things that they do if they have somebody accused of a crime or something like that, they'll look at their social media page.
That's right.
And
that
sometimes will give them insight into the individual. You know, sometimes you have some of us, some people, I'm not saying our people, because, you know, we have, you know, white people, other ethnic, other ethnicities, whatever, you know, they'll brag as to, you know, what happened. And they'll put it right on the social media page. And law enforcement will tell you, I've talked to several, you know, investigators and prosecutors, been in seminars, and they'll tell you one of the first things that they do is go to a person's social media page to see what it is that they put on, if the suspect or perpetrator has been accused of something, they'll go to the person's social media page to see, you know, what kind of conversations that they may have had back and forth with somebody else. And a lot of times, they say that gives them, due to law enforcement investigators, that gives them, that opens the door, so to say. So when we were talking about, you know, remaining silent, that's another thing. If you're doing something that might be considered unscrupulous, or if you're smoking weed, whatever, don't put it on your Facebook page or Snapchat or whatever those things that are out there. There's no need for it, because there's, what is the phrase there? There is nothing good can come out of it, is what it amounts to. So be mindful. Saying nothing, remaining silent can sometimes also delve right into the social media aspect as well.
That's right. Yeah, how beautiful. Yeah, so again.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I just wanted to chime in just very quickly. There is actually like a song going out right now, a hot hip hop song going out where he names off different people that he shot and killed. And he actually, they use that song in court to convict him for these people's murders, because they are now using the songs where you, you know, a lot of times are bragging about the things that you are doing. They're holding it against you. And so I think that's another, just a point off of the social media, like keeping yourself clean so that way these people can't use you against you.
That's right. Yeah, very important, very important. Well, thank you all so much for sharing, and we thank you all, Sister Marguerite. Thank you so much for coming on and being that first person to stand up for me, Sister Nyla, Sister Sandera, Brother Athiel. And I would like to thank Sister Samaya Muhammad, who's our producer. And I would like to thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice on the Elevated Places Network. To hear previous shows, you can log on to the Elevated Places. I would like to thank again Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad and the Elevated Places team, Brother Terrence, Sister Donna, Sister Rona. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you listen to Ask Dr. Dr. Ava. She comes on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I think I said, Sister Sandera, thank you for chiming in with us, but I just wanted to make sure. So, again, listen next week. And actually, we have two activists, one very well-known person who works with you who is going to come on to our show next week. That's what's in the lineup in our plan. So thank you again. Assalamu alaikum.